You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along. You're listening to the Golf Podcast here with William Hill, Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you this week for the action in South Africa and in Hawaii. First of all, a warm welcome to the man sitting to the right of me right now. It's Dave Tindall.
Left and right. So
left and right.
Yes. Hello.
Have to write them down. How
Hello.
Are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. And as I've just said to you off air, we got away with it, didn't we, last week?
We did, because as Mike Mayne mentioned at the end of the podcast, we ended up having 7 points each way on Jordan Spieth last week between us. Obviously, if you're out there as a listener, as a punter, you might listen to this podcast sometimes and think, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm just going to go with my own views anyway. But sometimes you might think I'll follow one or two. But all three of us went with Jordan Spieth each way, and he eked out third place in the end with that closing round of 65. But it looked like it was going to be a week of zero returns, didn't it, for a long, long stretch.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he dropped below halfway, didn't he, for a while. Although, to be fair, it was just a couple of horrible holes, wasn't it? He took that triple bogey 7 on the 17th on Friday, and then he almost admitted he'd given up trying to win it from there. But he did very well on the weekend. His weekend score of 11 under was actually the best in the field, so he did play nicely.
I think he made most birdies of anyone in the field, and I think it was significantly more than anyone else in the field as well. But he had those errors that he'd not had in previous years at Kapalua, and they cost him in the end. And Justin Thomas won yet again on the PGA Tour. Won twice in his last four starts, a whole host of other top finishers as well. Impressive performance, and the three that finish 1, 2 and 3 are all in the field at the Sony Open, which we'll talk about shortly. But Thomas is looking better and better every single week, isn't he?
He is. He's one of these you could see racking up a few wins, and you think, is he going to be another one now? Is it going to become a big six, or however many it is nowadays, where they just keep getting ones by the name? Maybe it's his turn to shine. I mean, you could see him winning this week quite easily, couldn't you?
Have you got to temper your enthusiasm sometimes and think maybe it's just a purple patch and we need to see that period of longevity?
A purple patch, i.e. an Alex Norren, as we say,
yes,
in the trade.
Yes.
No, with him, he's better than that, isn't he? Because he's so young, I just think it's a big, bright future. Here's some of the others talking about him. Spieth was very, very glowing in his analysis of him. So, yeah, I think Justin Thomas is the real deal.
Those two are best of chums, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so. But Spieth says it how it is, though, doesn't he?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's worth listening to him.
Let's get stuck into this week, then. Two events to cover on the podcast, and we'll start with the BMW South African Open. And Rory McIlroy in the field. He's 2-1 favourite here with William Hill. Andy Sullivan is 10-1. Brandon Stone is 12-1. Thomas Aitken, 25s. George Kutsaya, Jaco van Zyl and Richard Bland, all 33s. 40-1 for David Horsey, and it's bigger prices than the rest. And it goes without saying that this event has been given a huge boost with Rory McIlroy throwing his hat into the ring, making good on a promise he made to tournament host Ernie Els and the Els for Autism Foundation to appear here. And he's overwhelming favourite to win on his seasonal reappearance. 2-1, Rory McIlroy. Let's start there. Let's forget about the golf course for a second and just talk about Rory and his chances this week. I hate it when people use the first name when they don't know them, but I just did it anyway. Let's talk about McIlroy and his chance this week. He's playing with new clubs in the bag. Made the switch from Nike to Callaway with Nike, finishing their club manufacturing. He's had to look elsewhere and obviously gone with Callaway and got a new ball in the bag as well this week. So it's a moment of change for McIlroy, but he's still 2-1 in a weak field.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, why are the big South Africans not playing in it?
I thought that was strange.
Is there some sort of
I've no
row
idea. I expected to see Charles Schwartzel in the field because this is historically where he makes hay, isn't it?
Schwartzel, Oosthuizen, Grace, where are they?
No idea.
if you're listening.
Someone will know out there, won't they? There'll be some reason that
some
we've not
kind
picked
of like
up on.
Man sponsor thing, or I don't know, some fallout. I don't know. It's just strange, isn't it? Because as you say, without Rory, this would be a particularly weak renewal, wouldn't it? But Rory's, as you said, Ernie Els played in his Irish Open, didn't he, for the Rory Foundation, so he's replying here. So it's good to see. And it's interesting because Rory tends...
Ernie's got the better end of that deal, hasn't he,
I think so. But it's interesting because Rory always normally starts in Abu Dhabi. So when you look at his early season results, it's always that tournament that's the starter. And he's always right up there, isn't he? Lots of seconds and thirds.
Apart from when he changed his clubs the last time.
But I think he was in a bit of a sort of funk, wasn't he, before going into that season. I think this season you get the feeling he's going to absolutely hit the ground running. I don't think he was in a great position last time. So here... obviously, a lot weaker field than Abu Dhabi, so maybe that two can become a one, because he's not got a lot to beat, to be honest, has he? You look at, I don't know, I think Brandon Stone is very, you need to respect him a lot. He won the previous event in South Africa before Christmas, the Alfred Dunhill, defending champion here, and it's the same course. So he's the big one, but beyond that, I don't think Rory's got much to beat at all.
He is 2-1. The negatives for McIlvoy, new clubs in the bag, as we've mentioned. Not played in South Africa since 2008.
Although he played well, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. And no experience of the golf course. Glendower is the golf course. Measures 7,600 yards or thereabouts. Standard par 72. The course has hosted this championship for the last 3 years. The winners have been Morton, Oren Madsen, Andy Sullivan, and as you made mention of, Brandon Stone, who won here last year. Based on those 3 years of play, distance from the tee seems to outweigh accuracy. Putting has been important as well, as it so often is. Kikuyu fairways, bent grass greens. I'm taking you like McIlvoy this week then?
Yeah, I honestly can't see him doing anything but having a massive chance coming down that final nine on Sunday. One thing I got slightly confused by, you just said bent grass greens. So you know the Future of Fantasy website that shows the best performers on bent grass? Well,
yes.
He's top of that. But he's also top of the Bermuda ones.
Right.
So isn't that kind of saying he's the world's best putter?
Kind of, I suppose. Is that actual outright stats, or is that
it's based on
performance on other types of surfaces?
Well, his strokes gain putting on bent grass greens, he's got a positive figure of something like plus 3 points something, and he's top.
Right. I've not checked out the list, so I wouldn't be able to... Obviously, I believe what you're saying,
yeah.
But I'd have to have a look
at
that.
So, in theory, Rory's on his favoured greens this week, which adds another little element of confidence, I think.
I've got an each-way pick. I've just got one pick in this. You've not got an outright selection for the podcast.
I think I would use this event to throw Rory in kind of doubles or trebles for other things.
I'm going with Christian Bezuidenhout.
That's fair enough.
At 50-1, and I think the price is reasonable. He was once ranked the top South African amateur, and for those that don't know that much about him, he actually tested positive for a beta blocker back in 2014 at the Amateur Championship. And that stunted his progress. He was originally given a 2-year ban from competitive competition, but that was reduced to 9 months subsequently. And he's shown since then that the quality still remains. He finished second behind Brandon Stone in this event last year, and he actually won an event on the Big Easy Tour back in September 2015 on this golf course. And that since then, he's won and finished second on the Sunshine Tour, with both of those performances coming in his last six starts. Ball striking has been very good in those performances, those last six performances, barring one disastrous round of 84 at the Alfred Dunhill Championship, which dropped him to 56 on the week. But he's clearly talented, got a big future, and I thought there was every chance he could make an impression this week on a golf course on which he thrives. And I thought 50-1... each way, with McIlvoy taking so much out of the market, and this not being a strong field, got your five places there to shoot at. I thought 50s was fair.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I've got no idea how to pronounce his name correctly either. Christian Bezuidenhout, I've gone with.
That sounds pretty good.
It's almost there, I think.
I'm not sure I'd confuse you for someone who speaks fluent Afrikaans. It's a good effort. I think Rory's going to be in the top five. Otherwise, I'll eat my hat.
I remember this for next week's podcast.
Brandon's saying every chance. But after that, Thomas Aiken, I think, deserves respect because in this particular tournament, his home open, I think he's been in the top five, maybe three of the last 4 years. So he's very good in the South African Open, Thomas Aiken. Kurt C's got a poor record there on this course. Horse has been playing well.
Yeah.
So beyond maybe McIlroy and Stone and half possibly Aiken, I'm struggling to see, you know, who might fill those places. I think your guy's got as good a chance as anybody.
Yeah, I've got the same guys written down. I've written down three names here. Bezuidenhout, who we've gone for at 50-1, and Brandon Stone and Thomas Aiken.
Right, okay.
As my other two. So I think Brandon Stone is clearly a player that has realised his potential, won three of his last 11 starts, placed in a couple of those as well. So he's playing great golf at the moment. And I don't think it's escaped many people's attention, but he shot a 61 in the practice round on Monday around Glendower. I don't know if you've seen that clip. They interview him afterwards, and he's playing with some of the amateurs in a practice round on Monday. And he said, I had to show them who was boss, and I shot a 61. I mean, if he carries that form into the championship proper,
yeah,
obviously very different demands when you're teeing it up on Thursday, he's got a chance to win and maybe 12-1 maybe is decent each way value.
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah.
Should we talk about the Sony Open?
Yes.
The Sony Open is the event on the PGA Tour this week, and it's in Hawaii. And Jordan Spieth is the 11-2 favourite. Hideki Matsuyama in the market at 8-1. Justin Thomas, 14-1. Jimmy Walker is 22s. Brant Snedeker, Justin Rose and Paul Casey, all 28-1. Gary Woodland is 33s. We've got 40-1 for Bill Haas, Billy Horschel, Charles Howell, Chris Kirk, Daniel Berger, Pat Perez, Russell Knox and Scott Piercy. And it's 50-1 and bigger the remainder. And we're back in Honolulu for the Sony Open. 12 of the 18 winners since this event became the Sony Open in Hawaii had competed in the SBS Tournament of Champions the previous week. I don't think that's a terribly significant number, though, personally.
It's kind of a bit self-fulf because obviously because the best players by definition.
Are there, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
it's not quite that simple because some of them miss it, but.
But 12
whole,
of 18,
yeah.
You look at it, for instance, this week, the players that played there last week, they fill the top five spots in the betting, for instance.
Yeah.
So, and then you've got players a little bit further down the list that also played last week in the Tournament of Champions. So, it's like you said, it's a kind of a tweak on a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain extent. Because you've got the best players playing in Kapalua nearly every single year.
I think maybe if it was 10 or 11 of it, I think it's just about
significant.
Works that way.
Yeah.
That it helps. If it was a tie break, you might use it. As it happens, I've got a 1-1 split, so I've got one who did and one who didn't play last week.
Okay. A completely different setup, as everyone mentions every time the tournament is here, to last week at Kapalua, because the golf course at Kapalua, wide fairways, easy to hit, and what you do off the tee is largely insignificant. This week in Wailea, it's a little bit different. The golf course is a lot tighter. Again, it's maybe a benefit to play last week because you get to play in those trade winds and on these types of grasses as well. So you've got that maybe added advantage there, and you're acclimatised. But this golf course only measures 7,000 yards and plays to a power of 70. Last week, 7,500 plus and played to a power of 73. So different demands.
Oh, very much so. It's just that if someone said to you, oh, the results from Plantation to Wailea, they're completely different, you would go, oh, well, that makes sense because they're such different courses. But in reality, of course, like you've said, there's a lot of correlating form. And if you have played last week, it does help this week. I think Fabian Gomez, who won last year, I think he was sixth the week before.
Yes.
So it was more the good form and the confidence you'd got from a run, I think, that helps.
And Jimmy Walker won this title back-to-back in 2014 and 2015, and we always talk about him as a West Coast specialist, and he's obviously had good form in Hawaii. He started very well last week before fading away.
The first time he won here, he'd only finished 21st the previous week, so it's not a must to have played well the previous week, never mind about played it.
Yes, and that's why perhaps you get some value further down the list of runners and riders here of those guys that didn't perform at Kapalua or didn't perform well at Kapalua last week, but were still in the field.
Slightly written them off as, oh, they're not quite in good nick.
Yeah, yeah. Just the one pick for me.
Two for me.
Okay, you lead us off then.
Yeah, I'll go for someone who probably fits what we've just been saying, someone who didn't excel last week, but I think this course is absolutely up his street. Russell Knox, 40-1.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good price. So last week, tied 17th, which is kind of midfield. Any positives from that? I think there were, because he putted well. That's obviously something thrown at him, that he's not the best putter in the world. But he was 7th in strokes gained, putting okay out of, what, 30-odd. But still, that's pretty good for him, 7th.
Yes.
He ended 2016 with a run of 3rd, 9th, 10th. Now, the 3rd was in the OHL Classic, which is at El Chameleon, or Chameleon, how do you say it? And I think that's one of the courses that really, the form there correlates really, really well with the form in the Sony Open. He has played really well on that course before. 2nd, I think he lost to Graham McDowell, didn't he, in a playoff, and then 3rd this year as well. So short, it makes sense, doesn't it? Both of them short par 70s by the sea. I just think this is really Russell Knox territory, this kind of course. The fly in the ointment, or you might say a bigger insect in the ointment, is the fact that his course form looks terrible on paper. He's got 4 miscuts in the 13th. So you kind of think, right, if I'm going to try and support this guy, I need to sort of brush that away a little bit. And he's explaining the first 3 times he played here, he missed a cut. And you've got to think, well, he just wasn't that a good player then, was he? I looked at his world ranking, actually. He was outside the top 1, 2, 5 in each of those years. So he wasn't the Russell Knox who went on to win a WGC event. Mm. Then he did come 13th, so there's a little bit of hope. And he was actually 6th at halfway that year. So I thought that's a nice little bit of confidence. And if you read his quotes from that year, he says he absolutely loves this course.
Right.
Absolutely loves it. Right up his street. So it's kind of confused him. He even says in the years when he did miss the cut before that, he'd played well and just made a few daft mistakes. So in his head, I think it's a course that really suits him. He missed the cut again last year. Oops. But he had a second round 65, so it was just a poor start. So I think this is absolutely in his wheelhouse. And I think 40-1 could look a really good price on a really good player, played really well at the end of last year, who, in theory, this course really does play to his skill sets.
I had a short list of 5, and he is
he on that?
He's towards the top of it, in all honesty. I think you can wave away that poor course form, given that it's a course that should suit him down to the ground.
Yep.
Short par 70 is right in Russell Knox's wheelhouse. And the putting's the only concern, but as you mentioned, did put well last week at Kapalua, so 40-1, more than fair, I think, from an each-way betting perspective.
Yeah, normally it's greens in reg is really important on this course, and he was 9th in that category last year, so that is his strength. So if he plays as what tee to green, if he does what we expect of him, then he puts as well as he did last week, I think that's a pretty powerful combination.
I'm taking a flyer here.
Okay.
Daniel Summerhayes is my pick.
Do you know what? I thought you'd pick him.
Did you really?
Yeah. Just when I was scrolling down the odds and in fact looking for a name at big odds, I reckon DK will go for that at that price. What, 150?
150.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair price on him. I know he's been badly out of form. He has been badly out of form. You mentioned Mayakoba as well. He actually has played the OHL Classic once in his career and finished 5th there in 2012, which is a good thing. Something definitely worth mentioning. Hasn't shown any real form since August. That's why he's such a big price at 150-1. Because if he'd come into this event, say in September, he'd be a 40-1 shot.
Yeah, and we'd
event.
Be going, oh, that's bad value, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I'm not exaggerating about that either, because he finished 3rd at a Baltusrol in the USPGA Championship. And I think after that performance, punters were thinking it's a matter of when, not if, with Summerhayes. And this setup suits him very nicely. He's been 17th and 13th here in his last couple of starts at the track. And if you look at some of the venues at which he's performed best in his career, there are similarities with this one. Played well in the Texas Open the last few years, where the wind can be a factor. And there's a good record at Deer Run as well, very good record at Deer Run, where attacking golf and putting is rewarded, and you've got to be sharp with your wedge play. And putting is definitely Summerhayes' best asset. Finished inside the top 10 the last 3 seasons in strokes gained putting, and I do think that is important around Wailea. I just think he's worth chancing on this course at 150-1, despite his poor recent form. Hopefully, he's been slightly freshened up by the break and he'll come out firing. And I thought 150s each way was good.
Yeah, I think there's certain courses with him. Have you just played him on those? And to be getting these odds, as I said, back then you would have thought no chance you'd ever see him at that kind of price for this event. And I agree. I don't think he's fallen off a cliff. I just think he's had a dip. And like you say, refresh the batteries. It's almost a good thing he's played badly at the back end because he now has something to sort out, doesn't he?
Definitely, definitely. Hopefully he'll be fine because he's... You look at his performances in major championships over the last couple of years, select major championships, and he's been good and you've been thinking, wow, this he can really play. And given his form since August, you wouldn't think you've got to back him 150-1, but on this track with some of those names around him, they've not got the same sort of ability.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So I'm going with him as my only pick in the event.
Very good.
Second pick?
Yeah, you talked about the OHL Classic, or Mayakoba as it was. I'm going to go for a former winner of that. Harris English, 50-1. I think that's a decent price on him. Again, had he played well, had he played last week and done okay, or it was a different time of year, he would be 28s, 33s in this kind of field.
Yes.
I mean, his form is very, very good. He's played the Sony Open 5 times, made all 5 cuts. 3rd, 2015. 4th, 2014. 9th, 2013. Was on course to be up there again last year, shot a 65 on the Friday, just didn't do it on the weekend. But this is one of his favourite courses. He says it reminds him of the courses he grew up on in South Carolina. It's the Bermuda grass, fast and firm. So this is absolutely, I think overall I do see this as a sort of horses for courses, or certain some sort of phrase that styles for that rhymes with styles.
It's, yeah,
you know what I'm on.
Yeah,
about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
A certain type of player.
I think to pick up on a couple of players that fall into that bracket, where it's kind of like it's a bit of an old school track, isn't it?
It's a little brain, not brawn, that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And two players that definitely fit into that. Have you finished talking about English?
Yeah, so Harris English, obviously got good course form on correlating courses. The only other thing I was going to say for him, really, he slipped out of the world's top 50. So I think that's a kind of pre-season goal for him.
Right.
He's down at 70-odd now, so he wants to get back in that top 50. I think this is a great chance for him to do so. One little thing, we talked about Rory and equipment. Harris English has gone back to Ping, I think from Callaway, but he's back with Ping, and Ping was his equipment when he won his 2 PGA Tour titles. I think that's a nice... It's not one of these ones where he's going somewhere new and it's all a bit in the dark. I think he's going back to something that's worked well before.
Yes. Very much so. Harris English, 50-1 in the market. Yeah, the two players that I was going to say, which fall into that bracket of courses for horses, are Charles Howell.
Yeah, definitely.
40-1. I mean, he's placed 8 times out of his 15 starts at Wylie. That's the number. It's 7 or 8.
7 or 8, yeah. Seven, he's in the top 5. Normally, it's not like they're ninths. He's landing the each-way money, isn't he?
He is landing the each-way money, precisely. He's 40-1 in the market. If you're looking to play someone in top 10, in a top 10 market, for instance, I think he's 130. He's being clipped in.
Or top 5.
Yeah, or top 5 market, precisely. Because you're not going to get rich backing him win only, are you, Charles Howell, in the course of his career? And Jerry Kelly.
Yeah, he's a sort of standing dish here, isn't he?
Standing dish. Yeah. If you're looking for someone, you like playing those top 5, top 10 markets. He's 125-1, Jerry Kelly. I think he's been in the top 10 the last 3 seasons at Wylie. So those are the two that interested me.
A friend of mine called Harry Emanuel, Harry the Hat, used to go and follow the PGA Tour around. Particularly, this was his favourite part of the year.
Obviously, because it's in Hawaii.
In Hawaii, where would you rather be? And he kind of got to know the players, because there's not that many who go week to week around, like Doug Ferguson maybe, but Harry became kind of in that little bubble. So he got to know the players quite well. And I remember one year he spoke to Jerry Kelly at this tournament. And because Americans are a bit woolly on what odds mean, aren't they, sometimes? They get a bit confused. And Harry told Jerry Kelly what his odds were. I think he was 100-1. Jerry Kelly could not believe it. He said, "That's crazy. I've got every chance on this course." He thinks it's one of the best courses for him by a country mile.
You know, and the results back that up as well. It's just, he's over 50 now, Jerry Kelly. You just wonder whether there's going to be any downturn now that he's got to that stage in his career. I'm with you. I like Kelly a lot. 125-1 could look big from an each way perspective, and if you're thinking about playing the side markets this week with William Hill.
I don't think there's a lot that can sort of regress in his game, because it's always been a bit sort of underwhelming as it is. It's not like he's lost 30 yards off the tee because he's got older. I think he's just always, he's become more wily maybe down the years. At Wiley, however you pronounce it. But yeah, I think, if you just take a view on certain sort of players and getting fancy prices on the courses that clearly they're favourites, then that's a good strategy, I think, for him this week.
Let's talk about the two guys at the head of the betting, Jordan Spieth and Hideki Matsuyama. 11-2 Spieth, Matsuyama 8-1. Should there be that disparity in the prices between the two?
Probably not, and I would have put up Jordan Spieth, but I think 11-2 just a bit too short. He was the same odds last week against 30-odd, and he's the same price in the field of 150 or whatever it is.
And he had the course form last week.
Yes. He's only played it once, so you can't get too, you know, can't draw too many conclusions. Interesting comments, actually, last week. He said his caddy, Mike Greller. Mike Grell has said to him, the Sony Open, this is absolutely up your street, and he thinks he's going to make this a permanent stop for him because he thinks everything is in his favour. The greens will suit him. Bermuda grass he loves playing on. So Spieth, I think Spieth took a lot of positives from last week. I think he said it, 26 birdies, I think it was like that. And he said it's easier to eliminate the sort of silliness of a few bad holes than trying to suddenly get your birdie count right up there.
I think he's got a big chance. Yeah. I do. I understand the... I pose the question to you, should there be the disparity in the prices between the two? There probably shouldn't, but I think I'd have it like this. I'd frame the market like this, because I think Jordan Spieth has a massive chance of winning this week, and he could be set for a huge 2017 Spieth.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's kind of not done great last week at times and still come third, it's when he does hit it, he's gonna win a few times, isn't he? Matsuyama's interesting because he's played here four times and never made it through to Sunday.
Yeah,
three missed cuts at the start of his career, and then whatever it is, that
missed
third
the 54 round. Hole cut, basically MDF, it comes up on the scoreboard,
MFI, CBS, one of those. So you think, I did look again, like Russell Knox, the first three you could probably wipe out because he was outside the top 500, I think, in the first year. Last year, though, I mean, I don't know, how many times do you need to... I mean, at least Russell Knox has got a 13th and 6th halfway. He's been on the leaderboard here. Yeah. Matsuyama's done nothing. But he is in the form of his life, so...
What about Jimmy Walker? One final word on Walker. 22-1 Jimmy Walker. Back-to-back winner, as I mentioned, finished 13th when looking for the three-peat, and led after round one last week in Kapalua. Is 22-1 a little bit insulting for him each way or not?
Possibly. I just think he went the wrong way, didn't he, last week? I'd rather someone who came through on the weekend a little bit more. So I'm not overly keen. I mean, if he won, it'd be no surprise. But I was disappointed the way he played the last few rounds, Jimmy Walker. I mean, Justin Thomas at 14-1. Could that be a price?
It doesn't look a brilliant setup for Thomas compared to...
But he's got a 6th here.
He has got a 6th here. I'm willing to let Justin Thomas win at 14-1 at this stage of his career.
I did have a little look how he'd performed the week after his two early wins, and he was outside the top 20 in both. Yeah. So maybe he's not one who could just go win-win straight away just yet.
Before we recap then, who's the player you don't want to win? This was a rather successful part of the podcast in 2016.
Well, I know you tell me off for going for the short price, but Spieth...
I might be
basically
with you this week, though. I think I'd go Jordan Spieth in the Sony Open in Hawaii as well.
And the other one, well, as we've done before, just quickly price it. What's the... Don't want to win McIlroy Spieth double.
Yeah. The favourite double pays 18.5-1.
Mm.
Wouldn't be a shock, would it? But no. I wouldn't be with it that. I'm not mad keen on McIlroy at 2-1, just because of the it being his first start of the year. I know he's performed well on a golf course he loves in Abu Dhabi in the past, but when he changed his clubs to Nike, he missed the cut in Abu Dhabi, and that was by far his worst result in that string of performances in his season opener, and he's not seen the golf course before, and will he be fully pumped up for this week, playing as a favour to a friend, really? Will he be dead set on going out there and winning, or will he be looking to next week and thinking, I'm looking to capture my first title?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Is it, maybe this is just sort of a
pipe opener,
get the dust off kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so, maybe. And listen, everything, I want everything in my favour when I'm backing a golfer at 2-1.
Yeah.
And not everything's in my favour.
Yeah. I mean, 2-1, you could find a 3-ball on Thursday of sort of no marks and win at the same price.
Yeah, precisely. So I want, I have backed golfers at 2-1 before.
Yeah.
When Tiger was in his pomp.
Oh, yeah.
You'd back him at 2-1. When he was winning every single, or each and every week, it's felt like anyway. But McIlroy, is everything in his favour this week? It has to be for me to get involved at 2-1, and it's not.
It's as well whether you think he would drift in running, although how far back would he have to go before you got a decent price? Because they're not going to
probably a long way.
They're not going to suddenly put him out to 10-1.
No,
if he's a few bogeys at the start, are they?
I think in the South African Open, the player that I don't want to win would be Brandon Stone. I think he came closest for me.
Yeah.
That
could be another kind of.
Yeah. Don't want to win double.
Good of Stone and Justin Thomas. What does that pay?
Stone and Justin Thomas, do you like in that? I was thinking Stone and Spieth. Stone and Justin Thomas, 194-1.
That's more like it, isn't it?
That's more like it. Let's recap the selections then. I'll start. I'll go in the South African Open, a point each way. Christian Bezuidenhu at 50-1. And in the Sony Open, I'm looking at Daniel Summerhayes, a big 150-1, and I'll go a point each way on him as well.
Yeah, both mine in the Sony Open. A point each way, Russell Knox at 40-1, and also a point each way on Harris English at 50-1. And I did forget to say he also won that Franklin Templeton shootout thingy.
Oh, right, okay. Just at the end of last year.
Yeah, so that's clearly. I know he did win it once before, and then he came to the Sony and finished in the top five, so there you go.
Thank you for your company, Mr. Tyndall.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned into the podcast. Do follow us on Twitter. It's at Dave Tyndall Golf, at D Kellner, and at M Grennan. Mike's not on the podcast this week, but hopefully he'll be back next week. Get your bets on for the BMW South African Open and the Sony Open in Hawaii here with William Hill. Good luck with your golf betting this week. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Tell your friends. We'll speak again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.